are listening to the Subtle Forces podcast. I am your host, Anja Naanja. This is a special 1 hour Subtle Forces episode. I don't do that very often because I feel like most things can be wrapped up within a half hour. But recently, about a half a year ago, I started an advice column in a typewriter enthusiast's magazine. And the question, the first question anyone ever asked me was, how can you tell the difference between failure and success? And I typed them an answer and it got printed and it got distributed, but I couldn't help feeling this nagging feeling like I didn't answer the question right. In fact, I answered it quite poorly. I had failed to tell them the difference between failure and success. And so I just had to have that sitting on my shoulders for a few months until I realized, you know, I could try again. I could try to answer the same question again. And that's what today's episode is going to be. And maybe it is one of those questions you can just never succeed completely at answering because, well, even the question itself is a bit vague. Now, if you want to read my first failed answer, you're going to have to go find a copy of the QWERTY Quarterly issue number one. But I can tell you that in issue number one, I do one thing correctly. I said the first thing you have to do is find your belly button. And I still believe that part to be true. For those of you who take everything literally, I want you to know that this might possibly be a metaphor, but it also might not. And just in case I answer this question really incorrectly again, I've also outsourced it to several of my friends who I consider wise people. So you're going to hear answers from Matthew Filipovich, Heidi Parks, Rue Gordon, Paul Druka, Blaine Wesolowski, Megan McGee. I figure someone in this lineup has got to be at least near right. Well, we'll see. I'll begin with my refreshed interpretation on answering your question, dear reader. Here it is.
Step one, find your belly button. Uh-oh, it's not there. When did you last use it? Walk backwards through your day. Where were you? What were you doing? Who were you talking to? And what were the emotions? Be honest. Could it be attached to someone else? Now that you've found it, rip it off and address it to your abdomen, that wobbly jelly bean receptacle. I know you like to touch things. Velvet wallpaper, or maybe the cool skin of a puffball mushroom. Or that scrub brush with the rubbery silicone teeth. All of these things are wonderful to touch, but listen, no one wants your touch more than your forsaken belly button. It feels foreign at first, I know. Like the wrinkly skin of a grandparent's ear. But it is yours, so find the warmth. Cradle it with both hands. Hold it down. Hold it down. Press. Make sure that navel sticks back onto you. Now, if a passing duck, say a northern shoveler, tries to beak up your belly button, deciding that it would make better use of it than you, clamp your hands tight. Hiss and stomp until the threat passes.
I see you are asking the core question that philosophers and religious leaders have asked for centuries and centuries now. Where did your belly button go? But I warn you, there are some questions that you might not like the answer to. There are some truths about the very nature of our universe that we feeble human beings with our feeble human minds are not meant to understand. Where did my belly button go? It was here a minute ago. Or was it? Was it ever truly mine? Can anything be truly mine? Which came first? The innie. Or the outie, tread lightly, for you're opening a Pandora's box that once unleashed may lead you down a path of navel gazing that you will never, ever return from.
I've had a belly button issue before, which could constitute a metaphorically lost belly button. I was struggling with digestion. In particular, dairy was not amenable to me. I would eat dairy, and if I didn't take a digestive enzyme, I would immediately lose the entire contents of my stomach. And I worked with my yoga teacher, Indu Arora, and I took a Marma Point workshop with Indu, and she went through all the Marma points in the body, which are an Ayurvedic way of understanding acupressure or acupuncture points. And as she made her way from feet to crown of the head, we got to the navel, and she was talking about the navel, and it suddenly dawned on me that I can't digest one of the most basic food groups, and maybe there's something that could be done about it. So Indu and I had a one-on-one consultation. It was my first introduction to yoga therapy, which now I'm a certified yoga therapist because her finding my belly button was so powerful. There were several things that she had me do when retrieving my belly button and my ability to digest dairy. Number one, she had me drink some tea that had rose petals and black pepper and fenugreek seeds in it, and that I felt had a deep and important impact on my digestion. I felt different when I drank that tea. But the other thing that I did is I took clarified butter, ghee, and added hing to it, H-I-N-G, which is also known as asafoetida. It's a slightly more pungent than garlic spice. Heated that up, strained it, cooled it, and AM and PM, I would smear a little bit of that ghee into my belly button, just like lip gloss, And I think that made a huge impact. And within a month, I was able to digest dairy with no problem. This happened over 10 years ago in 2011. And ever since, I've been having a great time digesting dairy. Now, looking back at that time in my life, I had just canceled my wedding and I had been dating for a decade a man who was a narcissist. And I now believe I had a lot of narcissistic abuse in that relationship from him. And I think that that situation probably did cause me to metaphorically lose track of my belly button. I only had to do those routines for a month and have not had to return to them. It's truly incredible that the Ayurvedic yoga therapy approach to healing wants to go in and correct the root cause, and it's not at all interested in creating dependency or in creating a system where you have to do a particular thing every day for the rest of your life, or you have to avoid something all the time. So no, I have not ever returned to that practice with my belly button or with that particular tea. On occasion, I'll drink it again because it's a tasty spring detox tea, but not with the same intention that I had before. So a belly button that's walked off metaphorically, I, as a yoga therapist especially, would want to look at that chakra. In the yoga and Ayurvedic perspective, we've got 7 chakras, and the navel is at the center of the solar plexus, the stomach third chakra, and that is a place concentrated on self-esteem and creation. Not the expressing of that creativity, but the actual making and mixing of things. And if I, in particular, look back to the time when my belly button walked off, there's a lot of problems to do with self-esteem when in a relationship with a narcissist. And so partly that caving in of self-esteem could be a reason for a navel or a belly button walking off. Certainly some things that are connected to the belly button, and I find all of these little colloquial sayings that we say about different body parts often connect pretty directly to that chakra. So you can feel a lot of stage fright or have butterflies in your stomach, and that might be connected to the solar plexus, to that part of your body, with having courage or bravery or being up in front of people or feeling looked at in an intense way. The other things that sometimes happen in a stomach would be if your stomach is tied in knots. For me, that often, when I say that phrase, I mean that I feel torn or full of indecision or guilty or bad about something or uncertain. And that type of thing, I think, can also lead to a metaphorical belly button walking off. The power of the belly button is immense. The belly button is a sign of our first contact and connection with the outside world. As a fetus in the womb, entirely dependent on one's mother for sustenance, that belly button is a connection to air, to breathing, to food and nutrients. The belly button is also the place where we release our waste, where we let go of things that we don't need anymore. And if you can imagine having your toilet clogged in your home, it's a big problem. So that in and out function of the belly button is incredibly important for feeling and receiving care. Then once a person is born, that belly button and umbilical cord continue to keep you connected to mother, to placenta, and it has to be cut, tied off, and then cut. And that is an important moment of realizing your separateness in the world, that you're no longer a part of your mother, but instead you are more independent and out in the world all by yourself. So that intense power of the belly button at birth and it being this pathway to everything that you could possibly imagine or access is very important. The belly button also does that umbilical cord over time starts to dry out and literally does physically remove and disappear. And separate from you. And sometimes parents will keep that little bit of the belly button the same way they might keep your baby teeth as they come out. So if you're feeling as an adult the sense of your belly button being missing or gone, that could have sort of a deja vu feeling of being an infant. Your belly button is that extension of the umbilical cord connected to you and then suddenly gone. As an adult and a child, when you think about the belly button and the power of that belly button, it is an incredible space of receptivity, of receiving, of digestion. And when I think about digestion, I don't just think about food, but I think about incoming knowledge, the ability to absorb and assimilate knowledge. The kind of thing where it's not just going through you long enough to take a test and then forget about it, but a way of being able to actually process and keep knowledge and information long term. So that ability of digesting, assimilating, taking something as part of yourself is incredibly important and connected to the belly button. I think sending some love and attention to the solar plexus and the third chakra would be a wonderful place to begin at encouraging your navel to return to you. The color Ayurvedically that's associated with that part of the body is yellow. So picturing yellow, maybe making some art with yellow or finding ways to surround yourself with more yellow or wearing that color more, could be a way in to thinking about that part of your body. You could also encourage your navel to return to you by paying attention to that physical space where your belly button is. A practice, again, that I've loved is to put hing in my belly button or to now put castor oil in my belly button and on my whole stomach area. So not focusing just on the navel itself, but that whole stomach area could be very powerful. I had a friend whose belly button smelled kind of ripe. There's something going on in there. And what I encouraged that friend to do was to put some coconut oil in the belly button so that it could be antimicrobial and not having a wet place for something to grow. That's slightly different from the question that you're answering, but I think it can get to a similar root of energetically paying attention to that space and applying things. You and I, Anja, both love to create a good potion and that there can be a real magic in it. And you might want to use essential oils or an herbal infusion. Certainly olive oil would be another wonderful oil to use with the belly button. It's a little bit more neutral. Coconut oil is a cooling oil. And the navel itself is a seat of fire in the body. Ayurvedically, there are five different elements, and digestion is the seat of fire, which is understood as pitta in Ayurveda. And then we also look at air as well as ether or space, the space between things, and those elements together combine to be vata. And then we'll also look at earth and water, which combine to be understood as kapha. So the digestive system in general is part of fire, and that fire ideally will be in balance if you are transforming your food into energy, into ideas, into usefulness, into the ability to sleep and think. And a fire can either be too hot, in which case it might need something to help cool it, like coconut, or a fire can be dwindling and too puny, and then you need something to invigorate and restore that fire. So finding a healthy and healing balance for your fire is very important. A coconut oil could be cooling, also has great, as I said, antimicrobial qualities. Another oil that you might choose to use is olive oil, and that's a neutral oil. Sesame oil is another wonderful neutral oil. There aren't a lot of heating oils. Mustard oil, for example, would be one of those, and you'd want to use that very cautiously, perhaps with an expert and not just because you listened to a podcast, for example. So sesame oil or olive oil. And then, as I was saying, Anja, you and I like to make potions. So you might infuse that oil with something. It can be beautiful to find something in the garden. My grandmother on my paternal side, her name is Rosemary. So I have a real affinity for the plant rosemary. I find it to be ancestrally healing for me. So I might choose to take some rosemary, either dried or from the garden, put it in my olive oil or my sesame oil, let it sit for a month, a moon cycle, if you will, and then strain it out. And then I might be inclined to use that particular oil. But that's the type of thing that you can do to reinvigorate that part of your body, to cast a spell, to say, I love you. Finally, a very important part of my understanding of yoga and yoga therapy is that you can practice yoga if you can breathe. There's no limit to needing to be able to do a fancy move with your body or even having or not having a belly button. There are plenty of people who don't have them or who might not have legs or who have, you know, all kinds of different abilities and body features. And in Ayurveda and yoga therapy, we always want to say yes and to that person, no matter what it is that's happening with their body. And so a very powerful thing that you can do is to close your eyes, meditate, and picture, visualize your belly button or the thinking around a belly button. You can picture yourself inhaling and that belly button expanding and lengthening, exhaling and feeling the belly button contract. And any type of yoga practice that you would like to do, that you have interest in doing, anything you want to manifest or create in your life, any feeling, especially connected to that third chakra of having confidence, of a lack of butterflies in your stomach, of feeling prepared, of feeling like you don't have knots in your stomach, that's the type of thing that you can visualize, picture, and add some nice power back into your belly button. If you're thinking about a belly button defending itself or you defending yourself, I think that, again, considering that chakra, self-confidence, when my belly button was perhaps absent for me or worn out and not able to digest dairy, it was from someone belittling and picking at me and not doing what he said he would do and creating a lot of that disease, as well as gaslighting, so denying my truth, convincing me that other things were true. And to defend oneself from that, it's important, I think, to be in community. You don't want to be just trusting one person's opinion. There are lots of things that in a microcosm can feel like they're wrong or not right, or you can doubt yourself, or your confidence can get squinched up into a little tiny ball. But if you're in community with lots of people, there's a real strength in that. That's part of why narcissists try to separate you from your friends and your family and get you all alone. So actively cultivating the opposite, getting lots of viewpoints, seeing a variety of people, having maybe a therapist as a touchstone or good friends who you get to repeatedly connect with are an incredible defense against those things that might come up and attack a belly button. I'm a little bit struck thinking about Marie Kondo. She likes to suggest that you enter your house and you say, "Hello, house, I'm home." And then you set down your purse and you say, "Thank you, purse, for carrying my objects all day." And that there's a true relationship and lots of active thinking about the other things that are in your life. And it's a real feeling of abundance. So simply acknowledging your belly button, rather than thinking of it as useless and its work is done because you're not in the womb anymore, you can continue to notice your belly button and maintain a relationship. Maybe check in and see, is there any lint in there? Am I washing my belly button out with soap enough? Am I hydrating my belly button and giving it some good oil? There are a lot of nice physical routines that you can use to take care of your belly button. You'd want it to feel well lubricated, not sticky, smelling good, and that physical caretaking can be important, as well as thinking about having good posture, so not allowing the belly button to cave in on itself overly much, perhaps having good core strength and testing your balance, doing things that keep you upright and tall and confident. And again, that is going to expand and do things for that third chakra as well. If you've got good posture, if your belly button is nice and forward facing, that will allow a lot of other physical systems in your body to feel real good. I love this attention to a body part that can sometimes get missed. And I think that perhaps, for me at least, when I'm thinking about Ayurveda and my own well-being and my art practice, I love considering a microcosm and a macrocosm. And that connects to those five elements that I was talking about before. Those five elements are in the earth macrocosm, and they also all exist in balance in your body, which is a microcosm. And that thinking in that really big way that you are about a navel as a physical body part, as well as a metaphorical body part, that it can be fun to start to think about, well, what is the macrocosm navel? Where does that land? What is the bigger navel or connector, as well as, is there an even smaller microcosm navel? And then especially that inherent connection of navel and belly button to the third chakra and to confidence. Thinking about career changes and other life transitions, things that are beyond one's control, it can be very unsettling. I, for example, am a person who struggles a lot with nausea. If I'm in a car traveling, etc., I can get nauseous very easily, or sometimes even if I'm like too tired, if I've stayed up too late, I'll have a little bit of late night nausea just because my body's tired. And you know, that connection of nausea and navel, I think, is very interesting, in that it can alert us to something being not quite right, or that we're moving at a speed that feels dysfunctional.
So, I want to interrupt briefly and say that when I'm tired, I get terrible hiccups.
Oh, wow! That's got to make it very hard to go to sleep.
No, they only go away if I lie down.
So for me, that example of nausea and speed, if my body isn't feeling like it's moving, but in fact I am moving very fast because I'm in a car or on a train or a boat, that disorientation around movement and place and location, I think, has a lot to do with change, right? Your location is changing, job is changing, and to be able to turn in, return to those people that you trust, that you love, that love you, like friends, and of course, thinking about that navel connection to sustenance could be an interesting starting point in thinking a little more about this inquiry into the navel. But I just, when you called me to ask about this question, I was so delighted and I was so touched that you knew that I was someone with a lot of feelings about belly buttons, and that made me so happy.
When I wrote Paul and asked him where his navel was, he said, "My navel, not to be confused with naval maneuvering. My navel is a conspiracy waiting to happen. It's shifty, flies under the radar, hasn't been licked in a good minute. I wish I could say more, say more, say more, a more.
Hello. So, as a reminder, for the sake of this interview, I will be adopting my NPR personality, and I just want to remind everyone at this table that this is a group exercise, and part of what it means is that your responsibility is to do a lot of mms and ahs, or mms if you really disagree with something, but lean into the gutturals. Try to allow it to stem from your navel and come up through your throat and out as you express your opinions and feelings. Exactly. I want to point out that will A, add some good commentary to this interview, but it also will help I, as an NPR host, feel like I am more in my natural habitat,
right,
as a deer feels in the Midwest. Well, I'm very concerned to hear that you've lost your belly button. How long has it been? 15 months? You've gone 15 months without your belly button.
Absolutely.
Wow, that's a very tragic case. The longest I had ever heard before this was 9 months. You know,
yep.
I lost mine once for 7 weeks, and even that was tormenting, traumatizing. I didn't know what to do. But what I'd really recommend is, if your belly button runs away when she feels like she's not being appreciated enough, is what I've learned. And the best way to appreciate your belly button is first and foremost to appreciate others' belly buttons.
Golly.
So, how many bellies have you been rubbing recently in your life?
Because what?
As physics and we have been learning over the past few years, belly buttons actually operate on a similar level to quantum entanglement, you know, where you can take two particles and have them get tangled up with one another.
All right.
And then you can shoot one to the other end of the universe, and they will still interact with one another. If one's spinning left, the other one will spin left.
No way.
And if one belly button spins left, the other one will spin left. And I think that your belly button doesn't feel entangled enough to others. Because as human beings, we can't be alone in that way.
God.
The belly button, their origin story is connection.
Ooh.
And so they continue to need to be connected to others throughout their lives. Well, you really just gotta dig your face in there. You know, like, when you see another belly button, obviously with consent.
Oh, no.
You need to smell it.
What?
You need to sniff it. You need to feel it with your fingers and with your nose. You need to listen to it. You need to taste it. You need to engage it with all of your senses and make it known to everyone present that you love that belly button of another person. Because then yours, no matter where it is, whether it's in Glencoe or Paris or Marrakesh, it knows.
Knows what?
It sees that love. It wants to be loved that way. And it left first and foremost because it felt that you couldn't love it the way it needed to be loved.
No.
And so it's hanging out with Tracy.
Wait,
that
Tracy?
Bitch,
who's
because
Tracy?
Because she cares about belly buttons in a weird way.
Tell me more about Tracy.
Well, she's a hoarder. She's way too many belly buttons.
What?
She has these charms that attract them from other people. But as opposed to trying to nurture and care for these belly buttons, she keeps them captive because she thinks that other people can't care for them the way they need to be cared for. She's and that only she has the keys to knowing what these sacred parts of her body is actually need.
God. How does she take care of them? What does she do with them?
Well, she keeps them in a little prison inside of her room, in her bedroom.
No.
And she doesn't let them see any light.
No.
But they get lulled into this pensive calming by this gathering of the belly buttons, because you see when many belly buttons are together, they enter into this state of navel tranquility. And then they forget that they need their owner. They need their lover. They need to go home.
Has anyone been able to get their belly buttons back from Tracy?
Well, she went to prison once. And the court ordered that all of the belly buttons be returned to their rightful owners. But even those owners, you know, they had been separated from their belly buttons for so long that they forgot how to actually create that connection again. We often forget that while the majority of our brain cells are unsurprisingly in our brain, that we also have them throughout our bodies, and that they have a large gathering of them also in our gut, very close to our navel. And our navel holds a lot of wisdom. When people say gut feeling, there's a truth to that because of the immense amount of brain cells and kind of heuristic understandings of truth that are developed at a very early age and are held not just in our gut but in our navel. So we need to remember the latent and early knowledge, the prebiotic soup of knowledge that we all inherit from Mother Nature, that is why we need to love our belly buttons.
Okay, but I'm sorry. I have to get back to Tracy because I think she might have my belly button captive right now.
Oh, shit. She got out of jail like 3 years ago.
And does Tracy have a belly button? I mean,
she has more than one. So let me tell you about my experience with Tracy, okay?
Okay.
Tracy really wanted my dad's belly button.
No.
And I saw this at a young age, and it was like a weird dynamic that was happening between my mother and Tracy, especially because my mother was really upset with her. And just like I still have like harsh memories of my parents yelling over this because my mother felt like my dad's belly button was cheating on her with Tracy. And so my mother tried to love it more, but my father wouldn't love his own navel enough. And so it was a very confusing situation, especially for me as a six-year-old. And so the only way that I understood how to respond, which thank God I did, was I started spending a lot of time with my dad's belly button. And many nights a week, I would climb into their bed and I would say, "Daddy, it's time for me to clean out your belly button." And I would really give it the attention it deserved, which so many of us forget to do. And I think that that's really the key component of the story. And it's also where Tracy gains her powers from, is that while, of course, the navel isn't an organ, but we treat it like a vestigial organ that we don't need. And I think that there's something really problematic about that, that there's all these things that when we can easily go long periods of time without realizing that they're having any impact or influence on our lives, that we just kind of eschew it aside. It's like the items in our house that we pass by every day that we forget take up space in our mind and in our environments, but yet it's there. It's as if you have a giant sculpture of a toucan in your living room that you need to walk around every day, but you forget that you're walking around it because you've been having this toucan in your life for so long. But now imagine the toucan's gone. You miss the toucan.
I miss the toucan.
You miss the toucan.
So I don't have a belly button. It's been 15 months. It's in a box, probably with Tracy, lulled in a belly button sleep with other belly buttons. How do I cajole it to return to me?
Well, I think we already discussed this. You need to give love to others' belly buttons.
To others. Okay. Okay.
Well, I recommend starting with Blaine's, with your husband's. And again, engage it with all of your senses. You must listen to it. You must smell it. You must taste it. You must hear the belly button. Every belly button has its own unique sound, if only you pay attention.
And then my belly button will extricate itself out of that box?
Slowly but surely. I've watched it happen many times.
Have you observed belly buttons just freewheeling down the sidewalk, rolling along, bouncing up the steps of a bus at the bus stop?
Especially, I saw it many times actually riding the 36 Broadway bus. I don't know why, but they always seem to take that one. No matter where they're going, they find a way. They're very ingenuitive creatures.
I am curious, what does the 36 bus pass by on its regular route?
It passes by many things. It passes by a puppy shop. It passes by a pro-choice church, a very liberal church that I've walked past myself many times. And in fact, even when I was last riding this bus, I remember there was a belly button on it. And right when we passed that church, it seemed to turn and cock its navel out the window and take a longer look.
Well, that's kind of odd and wonderful. Maybe. I don't know. What is that?
So I don't know if that was mere piqued curiosity or some deeper religious affiliation, specifically with Lutheranism. It was a Lutheran church. But as you may recall from your theology classes, the story of Martin Luther is that he believed in reading your Bible. And he stapled his list of ideas and reflections on how the church could better fit its communities. And that part of what it means to be Lutheran is to be an active component and breather of your own religion and not just a passive receiver. And I think that maybe is part of the connection. I don't know, but I feel that must be a part of the connection, because the belly button wants to be not just a receiver, but a taker and a receiver, and that it is partially our responsibility to allow it that space. In fact, I think not doing that is actually quite narcissistic.
To not receive and to not take?
Well, to not to give your belly button and other people's belly buttons the space that they truly need.
Space.
Well, I think you have to think long and hard about, why is somebody trying to take your belly button? Why would your belly button want to leave you? Because if your navel goes, it's always partially because it wanted to. If your house gets broken into, your things want it to be taken.
God!
So, today I got a letter in the mail, a piece of certified mail. Certified mail, if you don't know it, is when someone spends more money to make sure that you receive a letter, and it's often used in legal situations like
when your landlord wants proof you got summons to court for destroying all the Venetian blinds in your apartment, and therefore you can't get your deposit back. That's not a true story, but it's a true adjacent story. But anyways, I got a piece of certified mail today. It's right here. I'll open it up. I'm not sure what's going on, but I figured maybe there's a tidbit in here. I mean, it's not from anyone I know, Chew Associates, but it's certified mail. Let's see. What does this say? Huh. To the Subtle Forces team, it has come to our attention that you have contacted Megan McGee and inquired about the location of her belly button. While your inquiry seems to be in good humor, in practice, you have caused irreparable harm to Miss McGee, who suffered the tragic loss of her belly button as a result of a horrible accident that happened while she was visiting Machu Picchu in November 2001. Hold up. I did ask my friend Megan McGee if she had any thoughts about belly buttons for this episode. I didn't think that she would reply. I mean, she can be pretty busy. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, but there's more. I'll read the rest here. While Miss McGee was lucky to have escaped with relatively minor physical wounds, the incident caused her great mental torment, mainly because she was under the false impression that the belly button was some sort of pressure valve for the body, and lacking it put her at an increased risk of spontaneous combustion. Who would tell her that? And Megan, I mean, she's so logical. That doesn't even sound like her. Eventually, this misconception was cleared up. However, the misplaced fears remained, and for years, any mention of belly buttons would send her into a panic, followed by several weeks of a catatonic state. Therefore, this letter serves as notice to you to immediately cease and desist all harassing activities against and towards Miss McGee, including but not limited to any mentions of belly buttons, Machu Picchu, alpacas, or igneous rocks. Such references are unbearable to her and delay her healing process. If you do not cease and desist, we as her legal counsel will be forced to take appropriate legal action against you and will seek all available damages and remedies. We trust you will cooperate and thank you for your attention to this matter. Sincerely, Elena Chu Esquire, the law offices of Quispe Chu and Chavez. Huh. Megan, I'm sorry. I had no idea. And I'm sorry if that apology triggers you. And I'm sorry if that apology for apologizing triggers you. And I'm Oh, God. Oh, no.
Wow. Right. Whew. Yeah? Wow. Absolutely. Yep. Jeez. Golly. Gee willikers. What? Yeah? All right. Ooh. No way. God. Oh no. What? Oof. Yep. Pretty much.
Thank you to my friends, Matthew Filipovich, Paul Chuka, Heidi Parks, Rue Gordon, Blaine Wesolowski, Megan McGee, Anton Seeger, my brother, who provided this music. Thank you to Victoria Robison, even though I didn't use your idea. Thank you to Jill Anna Ponisic, you know what you did. Thank you, Gordy Quarterly Magazine. Thank you to my belly button, and thank you to yours. Thank you to the belly buttons long forgotten and locked in a box in Tracy's room. Thank you to the belly buttons that never were, and the belly buttons that will always be. Here's one more thought from High D. Parks.
Another important way that you could nurture your navel or draw it closer to you or add some more confidence would be with a seed mantra. Each of the chakras has a seed mantra. From root to crown, they are vam, lam, rum, yum, hum, om, and silence. So for the navel, it would be rum, R-H-U-M, rum. And there are a lot of wonderful ways to chant. One might just be in your mind's eye, chanting rum, 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 rum. You could also chant slower, as though chanting om. And I love to chant at a variety of speeds. So for me, a favorite way, again, picturing yellow with my awareness on my navel would be first smooth and slow with one breath, and then a medium speed, and then chanting as fast as I can. So I'll share that with you now. Rum. Rum, 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 and then allowing that echo of chanting to be felt in your throat and potentially in your navel.
Oh, who's this? Hey, you're back. Yeah, welcome home. Yeah, hop up right up here. Yeah, get in there. Yeah, just nestle right in. Yeah, that feels good. I feel good. You know, I feel myself. I feel weirdly powerful and strong for once. I like it. If you enjoyed today's episode of The Subtle Forces, I encourage you to review it on whatever platform you're listening in from. Just like this person who, I have to say, the headline here is not good. Anja for president? I can tell you that's a bad idea. But they did say, we pay tribute to Anja's voice and intellect and humor and creativity and curiosity and all-around coolness. We always get excited to hear what's on Anja's mind and the people she chooses to figure it out with. Where Anja goes, we will follow. That's so nice. Thank you, J.W. Frederick. Well, I hear the amphibians calling, which always indicates that it is time for me to remind you and me both that when encountering any subtle force, remember you have both your logic and your feelers with which to interpret it.